You know what this is like? It's like those old movies we both love.
Now I'm gonna tell you my whole plan, and then I'm gonna come up with some absurd and convoluted way to kill you, and you'll find an equally convoluted way to escape.
Sounds good to me.
Well, this ain't that kind of movie.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another movie podcast. I am Oscar, and with me, as always, is... someone.
Why is this dirty?
Oh, hey, it's Ralph.
Doing something else. Hello and welcome. Anyway, this is episode number 86, and today, as almost always we do three movies. We'll review three movies. Those three movies are going to be the latest space opus called Ad Astra.
Opus, nice.
Right? Feels opusy. And we'll move into a review of Rambo, Last Blood. I believe it's the sixth installment, or is it the fifth?
I think it's the fifth. Maybe wrong. I'll look it up.
And then we'll conclude our show with a little thing from Netflix, a documentary that made some headway called American Factory. And that's what we're going to do today. Three different, very different movies from each other. So this is a nice mixed palette. This is all, it has the veggies, it has the meat, right? It has a, maybe even the sweet in there. Has every kind of thing in there. So that's what we're going to do today. You can always check us out at our website, which is otherpodcast.com. Over there, you can find all of our previously done bonus episodes, future bonus episodes under construction until the beginning of the new year. So, but you can see all of our, or listeners, you should say, listen to all of our previous bonus episodes there, which are just really extra reviews. And we also have things in there like top 10 shows from the last 2 years, and then the halfway mark episodes too. We do top fives and the halfway mark. We also have top 10 TV on there and stuff like that. Right. We've also done a couple marathons, actually a few marathons, and we're gearing up for another one here, probably like in October, I would say. I mean, I know it's October already by the time this comes out, I think, or right before.
Right before. Yeah.
Right before. So we're going to gear up for another short marathon there before the year ends. That's going to be fun. So yeah, check us out, all that at otherpodcasts.com for all that juicy, you know, information. Yeah. Yeah, see? And before we begin with our first review, which is going to be Ad Astra, we're going to do recent discoveries. We both have a short list today, so it's going to be nice and short. Sweet and short. So you have one and I have one. What's your one that you have?
My one is a movie directed not by Peter Jackson.
Oh, was that like in the...
Yeah, that's like the big selling point of it. I think it's from producer, you know, but they say producer. Or from the mind of Peter Jackson, they say, right? But it's not. It's like he's written it, and then he does something else. Directed by Christian Rivers. Who did...
That's not Game of Thrones name. Like, people who are born in the Riverlands, who are bastards, are last named Rivers.
He's done a bunch like of Snow. Old stuff. He did a movie called Minutes Past Midnight. And then he's done a bunch of short films, really nothing crazy except for this movie, I guess. But he is backed. He does a lot of stuff with Peter Jackson itself, so I can see why Peter Jackson would help him out or whatever. This movie is Mortal Engines. This is starring Harold Hillmar, Robert Sheehan,
Hugo Weaving. I think it's Weaving.
Sheehan?
Yeah.
Oh, that makes more sense, yeah. Hugo Weaving.
Hugo Weaving, isn't it?
Yeah. Jihai. Ronan Raftery, Patrick Malahide, Layla George. Oh, this one you'll like, Stephen Lang or Stefan.
Yeah, he's from Avatar.
Right, very much so. Yeah, so I'll leave it at that. And then, as I said, co-written amongst other people, screenplay, Peter Jackson, and then like two other people, Philippa Boyens and Fran Walsh.
Cool. So this movie was one of those, like, I remember the year it came out, or right before it came out, it was like a Christmas movie, like one of those, right? Yeah. And there was a lot of publicity. We saw a trailer like a trillion times. Right. It looked really expensive.
Right.
But I don't know. I never had any real interest in watching it. I had a slight interest. Uh-huh. I think it was one of those people, like, I'm going to wait to see what people say kind of movies. and people said no. So
yeah,
I didn't see it.
I'll read the quick description. In a post-apocalyptic world where cities ride on wheels and consume each other to survive, two people meet in London and try to stop a conspiracy. Essentially, our main actress in this, which is Hera Hilmer, who plays Hester Shaw in it, she's like hell-bent on getting revenge after her mother's death from this guy. Our villain in this movie is Hugo Weaving, which plays a Thaddeus Valentine.
Thaddeus Valentine. That's a name. That's a name.
Isn't it? So, yeah, this movie, the problem was there was no connection to the characters. Yes, did they display emotions and stuff? Sure, to a certain extent. But really, it was just like there's two characters who end up falling in love who you never believe that they fell in love. You're like, why are they falling in love? They seem like the most distant to each other. There's never been an inkling of it. There's never been anything to justify these reasons, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you have also people who are like all of a sudden betray other people. And you're like, why? I don't understand.
Is it based on something?
I think it's a book. And then I was like, yeah, I think it was based on a book. And then it was just very curious. And then there's this world, which I don't mind being dropped into a world and just kind of like, this is where it is. You're living in it. Deal with it. You'll figure it out. That's cool. I actually prefer that in almost any movie because I don't need you to explain to me everything that's going on in your world. Of course, unless you're doing some crazy anthology or something.
Right.
And I would love to know as much as possible. And in this one, you get very little, but you also get like, I don't know. It's confusing because they do flashbacks, but it's always been apocalyptic. So it's like we're in the third generation or something of the post-apocalyptic world already, second to third generation. Like people barely remember. Some people barely remember what happened. Were alive during like how the world was before they were in cities or something. You know, like in wheels or something.
So it's so far beyond like what we used to be.
Right. Yeah. So we're pretty removed from there at this point. Yeah, but it's kind of weird. Just how it works overall, and there was lack of love, lack of character in this movie. I just didn't attach myself to it. It took me a while to finish the movie, and by a while I mean it took me longer than I don't know two sittings. I think it took me three sittings overall.
Okay. I can tell because every time I would go on my HBO app, it would say, want to continue watching Mortal Engines? I'm like, I never even started that.
Yeah. Right. And it was just like, I thought I'd be able to finish it in a whim one day. And I was like, let's start this movie. And I was like, 2 hours. God.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay. And I'm watching it and I'm like, oh, okay. And then they introduce characters. They give you no description of them.
Yeah.
And then you get like, you get this quick thing about them, and they're supposed to be badass, and you're like, oh, is that what you were supposed to be? I didn't get that from this movie.
Mm.
And there's like the heroic moments and these big scenes that don't justify themselves because there's nothing there to be justified. It's like if you were to walk in on these scenes, you'd be like, oh, okay, I guess she's the big hero of the movie. And they'd be like, you're wrong. There's nothing. You're absolutely wrong. She's just doing something heroic. She's not really a big hero of this movie. You know? And it's just like, it's kind of dumb.
Okay.
But yeah, I do not recommend this movie. I can see why.
Was the action even like worth? No, not even watching.
You know, it looks like they put a lot of money into it and a lot of stuff, like, you know, going on for it. But
well, it looks like it reminded me of a little bit like a Transformers meets Mad Max. I'm not saying that's accurate. So
it was going for like a Mad Max vibe kind of thing, you know.
Right.
But the problem was it just didn't. I don't know. It focused too much on itself. Mm-hmm. It focused too much on like the certain characters, which is like, I guess you kind of want to do in a movie. That's you're just trying to focus on people's lives and in the worlds around them.
Mm-hmm.
But the world is interesting enough to kind of focus around that as well. That we just barely touch base on it.
Okay. Yeah. I mean. I mean. I guess it sucks. I felt. But. Because I remember, like, when I see movies when involving a lot of, like, detail in creatures or robots in this case, because they're, like, cities that move, right? I just wanted to see. I've always liked one of the very few things I like about Transformers movies, but, like, most of them anyway. When they transform, it looks like every bolt and piece goes somewhere. You know, like, the detail, it's not just the detail that's in there. It's just that they figured out how to animate how the pieces would move to fit what they're trying to make.
Right.
you know, it almost looks like it's impossible. If that bolt wasn't there, then you can't transform. Like that's a, so I was wondering if it's cool like that, but it seems like maybe not. Yeah.
Family, right. No.
Okay, then I won't watch it. Not a big deal. Because I was like, I can watch a dumb action movie in the background. But like, if this doesn't,
it's not
meet,
even that. That's
doesn't
the problem.
Meet that criteria,
it doesn't even meet
it.
The criteria.
Nah, I'm good. All right. Well, I saw a movie that I never saw. So this is my first time, but it's an older movie. It's from 2007. It's called Mr. Brooks. Have you seen this movie?
No, but I feel like I've seen the cover of this movie so many times.
You feel like you've seen the cover? This is a... Oh, my God. I have to go back all the way. Let me read the thing here. Read a short one. Fuck that paragraph. A well-respected businessman is sometimes controlled by his murder and mayhem-loving alter ego. That's a strange one. Mr. Brooks is a movie that made some headway with people. Like, people talked about it a bunch. It was like a... I don't know why. It must be because it's rare to see Kevin Costner be like a serial killer, but that's what he is in this movie. He's like, remember that movie, The Accountant, I think it was called, with Ben Affleck?
Yeah.
Where he had also the same thing, like problem where he needed to kill, and the movie...
I don't know if he needed to kill, but...
Well, he was like this perfectionist guy who...
Right.
Right? Who I think, I mean, from what I remember, he seemingly needed to... Like, stay, like, control his rage, control whatever he had.
Right.
In him.
Well, he found an outlet was killing bad guys.
That's what I'm saying.
Right,
yeah, that's exactly. This is like that, except that he kills innocent people. And he's called the fingerprint murderer or something like that. I don't remember. And this movie stars, like I said, Kevin Costner, Demi Moore, which happens, you know, great. William Hurt, and Dane Cook.
Wow. That guy fell off the face of the earth.
Yeah, that guy. Oh, man, he's so bad.
In this movie?
Oh, I mean, he's bad in every movie he's been in. But, like, he's so bad in this one. Because he's serious the whole time. It's a serious movie. With serious shit. And he plays the guy who accidentally finds him out in the beginning where he, Mr. Brooks, kills, who's a very successful businessman. He's really rich. And he finds out that he's a killer. He takes a photograph of him while he kills, like, by accident. Like, something like that. And then... Dane Cook's character, the whole plot of him is that he tries to, like, handle Mr. Brooks or coerce him into, like, taking him with him to kill someone because he always wanted to know how it feels to kill someone.
Okay.
Right? And he thinks he's all safe or whatever, even having, you know, extra copies of the murder because he could just say, like, oh, I'll just turn you to the police if you kill me, things like that. But it doesn't work out as well, and he's so stupid. His character... And his acting is really stupid that I just... It's so easy to ignore him in the movie.
Yeah.
William Hurt, though, who is... I like William Hurt as a bad guy. In this movie, he plays the alter ego. Like, he's constantly talking to William Hurt, who I guess is his father, is my understanding.
Okay.
Like I'm saying, like, he made his alter ego into his father, and it keeps egging him on to kill. You know, he stopped killing for many months, you know, but he had the urge again, and he had to do it. But on his best crime spree, he would do it like every other day or something like that. Like shit like that. And Demi Moore was like the old detective that was chasing him back then.
Did he ever like profile? Was he something? Sorry, I've been watching Mindhunters.
There's some profiling in there, not much. It's really just, it's action heavy and plot heavy because there's this other plot line with the daughter. Like his daughter like came home from college, wants to quit or skip college or whatever. And he's obviously worried about that. But what you find unfolding is that she may have the same issue that he has.
Oh, interesting.
You know, like all these plots are in this movie. They're everywhere. And he's just like, I think he's about to retire. The movie opens with him being man of the year in business. It's like this guy has so much going on him, on his plate.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, Demi Moore, who is supposed to be the lead, you just think that she's just the lead detective looking after him for him. And she is. She has her own issues with some divorce.
Oh, wow.
And then issues with another case where, like, a guy that she captured who was, like, the serial killer or this asshole killer broke out of prison, might be after her.
Serial killer of an asshole killer.
Yeah, like something like that. He looked like a hillbilly killer to me.
Yeah.
Dude, there's just so much plot in this movie. Dude, I mean, so for that reason, I love it. It's kind of fun. It's just so fun. Just ignore everything. Just have fun with it. Don't try to read into the psychology of it. Mr. Brooks was more entertaining than I expected. Okay. I expected it to just be like one character kind of thing.
Yeah.
But no, that movie goes everywhere. And also, it's very... All that plotting and stuff makes me think of a lot of older movies. Uh-huh. And so I look up like who wrote or directed this movie. It's written and directed by the same person who is Bruce A. Evans. He wrote a combination of really good movies and not great movies. For example, like... He wrote two good movies, Stand By Me.
Okay.
And Starman.
Starman. Which one's Starman?
It's the, the John Carpenter movie with that Bridges guy. No. Yes.
I'll look it up.
Yeah, whatever. Maybe you've never seen Starman, but it's a really good movie.
Maybe I haven't. That's why I'm curious.
And this is only the second movie he directed, by the way. But he also wrote, here's the two that he wrote that are not so good. You ready?
I didn't see it.
Cutthroat Island, which turned out to be a bomb, but I don't think it's because of the screenplay.
Bruce Evans, right?
Bruce A. Evans. And then he wrote Jungle to Jungle. Remember that movie?
Oh.
With Tim Allen? Whatever. He wrote those movies. And he hasn't directed or made anything since Mr. Brooks, I don't think.
Hey, Jungle to Jungle. I remember Jungle to Jungle.
Yeah, you remember that shit now? Yeah. Anyway, that's the guy here.
What was the other one you said?
Cutthroat Island. Starman?
No, Cutthroat Island.
Cutthroat Island is one of those famous bombs from the 90s, like a big action movie about pirates and shit that completely failed and no one saw
it. I want to watch it.
I've actually only seen bits and pieces of that movie.
Ooh, it's about a female pirate.
Yes, nice. A female pirate, yeah.
I'm down. I'm down to watch this movie.
Yeah, it sounds awesome, right? It's a great title.
Sounds awesomely bad, yeah.
I love the title. But anyway, Mr. Brooks is a fun ride if you're into that kind of thing.
It's got Gina Davis in it.
Yeah, Gina Davis, yeah, famous for that movie, or famous for helping bomb that movie. It's not a bad set. I think it's a fun set, Mr. Brooks, but it's not like, I mean, in the age of Mindhunter, what is it?
Yeah,
it's nothing.
Right. Well, right. He hasn't done anything in a while either, right?
No, this is an old, like, he wrote Starman in the 70s, 80s, you know, yeah. So like he started there, so he's probably old-fashioned. I don't know, or maybe he just does it whenever he wants, or maybe doesn't have
He says he's got upcoming projects for him. Maybe he's writing some other stuff, directing.
Hey, also, he seems to take his time. There's a big gap between.
Yeah, he does pretty good big gaps. Yeah. Well, obviously, he's taken the gigantic gaps since then.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely. This is the biggest gap from 2007.
I would say so, yeah.
So that's Mr. Brooks, and that's what we've been watching in recent discoveries. We're going to take a break, and when we return, we shall review our first film of the evening, which is Ad Astra, which I believe is Latin for To the Stars, right?
Well, I don't have to speak Latin.
You don't have to know some stuff.
I don't know that.
In Vino Veritas.
I don't know that either.
Okay, stay with us, for fuck's sake.
I do what I do because of my dad. He gave his life for the pursuit of knowledge. Because up there is where our story's going to be told.
This is a top secret psychological evaluation. Please describe your current emotional state.
I'm steady, calm, ready to do my job to the best of my abilities. I will remain calm. I will remain focused.
Astronaut Roy McBride undertakes a mission across an unforgiving solar system to uncover the truth about his missing father and his doomed expedition that now, 30 years later, threatens the universe.
Wow, so dramatic.
This is Ad Astra, written and directed by James Gray, as well as Ethan Gross. Gross. He wrote it. He didn't direct it. The other guy. This is starring Roy McBride, H. Clifford McBride. Oh, never mind. Wrong names. kidding. Brad Pitt, Tommy Lee Jones, Ruth Negga, Donald Sutherland, Kimberly Elise. Mm-hmm.
Elise, I would probably go with.
Lauren Dean.
Sean Blakemore.
Thank you. I was about to say Sean Blakemore. I don't know who that other guy is. John Ortiz, who's in this.
He is. Yeah,
forever. I like John Ortiz.
A lot of people are here very briefly. Liv Tyler is briefly.
Or Kayla Adams, for example. I like Kayla. I've seen her. Yeah.
Basically, there's only two actors of Sin is Bad.
Exactly right. I think last time I did it, I went twice. So yeah. Go ahead, Oscar. What did you think of this?
So, this movie is a movie that I really wanted. Watch it again.
I think it made it top five, right?
It was my number one most anticipated
movie.
That's right. Because of James Gray.
Right.
He has had a very good track record. The guys are very good at human stories. He does very good with, like I don't know, going with that perspective and showing some like the beauty and a lot of things.
The Immigrant, Lost City of Z.
Right.
Or those, Zed.
Zed, yeah, it says Zed a lot, doesn't it?
Zed a lot, yeah.
And,
that's a British thing, yeah.
And in a way, the this is almost like part of a, like, Ad Astra is like the third in a trilogy of, like, these adventure movies, adventure stories with the immigrant.
Yeah.
The immigrant meaning, like, coming to a new land. Yeah. Now, it doesn't work out that way. It doesn't work out. It doesn't look like an adventure, but it's an exploration of a new place. It is an exploration,
yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And La Cidade could not be more adventure. The guy's all about that.
Yeah.
Discovering the
Well, I think he
jungle.
Does go back a little bit more, if you were to... I've never seen The Immigrant, but from what you're saying, yeah. It does go back more to this exploration. It's not necessarily an adventure for him.
Yeah.
In Ad Astra now.
Yeah.
It's more of an exploration and... And figuring out is more answers than anything.
Yeah.
And I feel like everything else has been so far of actual places, you know?
Yes.
You get what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, I see what you mean.
Not that he's not going somewhere, but yeah.
Right. I would say that they all work differently, too. They all have different feels and moods to them and atmosphere. I would say this one's probably the most depressing, this Ad Astra movie. Not that it's bad, mind you.
Yeah.
It's just just the most fucked up, probably.
Yeah.
But The Lost City of Z for me is still, I mean, not that I have to compare them, but it's like my favorite. It's of these trilogies. I also love Two Lovers. I remember not liking Wheel in the Night, but I haven't seen it since it came out, so I should probably watch that. Anyway, but yeah, it's a really good director, so I want it. It's my number one for that.
Joaquin Phoenix, right? Wheel in the Night?
Yes, it is. Right. Joaquin Phoenix
Mark
is one
Wahlberg?
Yeah, I believe so. I'm not 100% on that.
He plays the cop. And then the
yeah, Joaquin Phoenix is like, he is... It's like what Bruce Willis was for M. Night Shyamalan when his starting career. Like, he used him a lot, you know? Things like that. That's what Joaquin Phoenix is for that guy, for James Gray.
Uh-huh.
They put each other on the map, kind of, you know? But yeah, he's a very good director. I love it. And I was so curious about this movie because I love space movies. I love it. Love it.
Yeah.
From movies like Interstellar, which I learned to love more over the years. I learned to really appreciate 2001 A Space Odyssey.
Yeah.
Fucking Arrival. I mean, it's not in space, mind you, but it's a similar feel.
Sure.
I would say Moon. Moon is cool as fuck. You know, a lot of great stuff out there. This year alone, High Life came out earlier in the year. The French director made movie. Yeah, I love this stuff. So easy. So much fun. This movie is also very good. I liked it a lot. There are parts of it that I love, you know, unblemishedly. But It is a movie that requires your patience. The movie's not super long either, but the movie feels longer than it actually is. And that's very much on purpose. It's not like it's boring, although people have said that. People going in there expecting a certain type, like Gravity, don't expect a Gravity. Gravity is like fucking bite your nails kind of tension.
Right, very much so.
This movie's not like that at all. But this movie has scenes like that for sure, but it takes its time. It's a very paced movie. And I think for that, it has its benefits and its downsides. But I think I overall really enjoy this movie. What about you?
Yeah, it's interesting to see a role where he's not a charismatic, where Brad Pitt is not this charismatic persona or somebody who's this very... although he does play a character that would almost be similar to his real life, which is almost a celebrity. Right,
because he's like a celebrity son.
He's a son of a celebrity, right? If you want to call him a celebrity, it's more like a person very revered.
Yeah.
So it's even better than a celebrity, because
right, a hero.
Yeah, that's crazy, right?
Yeah.
Right. Exactly. So
if Superman a kid, this would be it. Like,
And it's interesting to watch him in this role. I did like the movie overall. I thinking about it now, it's like the guy, he acts almost depressed most of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And until you figure out that I made a joke watching this movie that I think Keanu Reeves would have been in this great.
Yeah, and I told you Ryan Gosling.
Right, you said Ryan Gosling, and I was like, yes.
Top three, like, people who can, like, act robotically or right. Act like they don't feel anything.
Very much
right?
So, yeah. And I was like, yeah, that works great, right. And nothing against those guys. It's just that they do a good job.
Well, that's what they're good at, right?
That's what they're good at, right, exactly. So, that's in this movie, Brad Pitt has to act that way. Like I said, I'm just not, I guess, going back to Meet Joe Black.
Black has that same feeling.
Right, has the same feeling. Yeah. So I just saw Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, and he's this charismatic motherfucker, you know?
Yeah, surprisingly so. Like, man, I haven't seen Brad Pitt so alive.
Right, you've never seen Brad Pitt so alive. Right. And then you watch this one, you're like, there he is?
Since Fight Club was probably the last time I saw him so alive.
Right, exactly. Right. And you watch this movie, and you're just like, okay, he looks like he's dead inside.
Right, dead inside, right.
So yeah, the movie does a really good job of, I think almost
it's like almost showing a form of something, depression or something. It looks like he can be, and he's just like faked it to the world. You know, like he's done a good job of just numbing himself so much.
Yeah.
Numbing himself so much. What's it called? To the world already, to everything that he doesn't have to. So I really did appreciate it. I really did like the movie. How it goes through his perspective.
I'm glad. I was a little worried that when I was watching it, like, oh, maybe you won't like it so much.
And how he talked. Well, I didn't. Like, I appreciated it after the fact.
Okay.
It was kind of sluggish.
Yeah.
Especially at the beginning, because I was like, oh, and I just immediately went like, this is the movie. This is going to be like that the whole time. And then once he gets emotions later on, you're just like, oh, okay. It makes more sense, everything that's going on. They actually explain it. They actually get into it without having to get into it. I mean, if you know what I'm saying.
Okay.
So, but I like you, I do like space movies as well. I haven't seen some of the movies that you've seen. But this is an interesting exploration movie because he's not. It's a weird space movie.
It's
both because,
very personal only movie, but also very world building movie.
Right. It almost feels like he. The movie does kind of sell you on the fact that he's the only person who can fix this issue.
Mm-hmm.
Without the least amount of casualties, but he does not succeed in that.
Not all the time.
No. That's my thoughts of the movie.
So I have a few things to definitely mention. This has a lot of meat. The Amazing Jonathan documentary has a lot of meat to the discussions we can have, more than the movie itself probably. But I'm going to try to taper it as much as possible so this won't be a super long one. But I also don't want to forget things. But one is, first of all, I want to talk about the sequences. There's some standout sequences in this movie. And I guess the one I want to highlight now is the one in the beginning. It opens with this accident, this huge Babylon-esque tower, satellite tower. Starts from the Earth, goes all the way to orbit, right into orbit up there in space. Right. And this motherfucker falls off it after this accident that kills some people, I guess. And everyone's falling. And apparently the rule is to just fall, because everyone has these parachutes. You just got to wait for the atmosphere to kick in to activate it. And it's such a fucking craziness.
But what's crazy is that, and I know it's like you're trained for it and everything.
Right.
You know, as an astronaut, there's like little to no panic in the man.
No, right. But the movie's very, like, that scene is kinetic as fuck, obviously, because he's falling. And he's, right. The way he's spinning could also, like, I think in the thing he talks about, like, you know, possibly losing consciousness, which is not good.
Because of the G-force, yeah.
Right, G-force. And the spinning. And it's like, it looked terrifying, but he's fucking calm as a rock, you know.
He says everything, like, what's it called? What is he, what's the... He says home base. Well, I forget the thing he says. Not Houston. He says home base or something or whatever. And then he's like, yeah, I might lose consciousness because of whatever. Mm. And just, I'm going to do this to try to counter that. And I'm like, you're talking normally.
Yeah.
You're in a crisis.
He's like.
And it's like a bank robber just came in and everyone else is freaking out. You're like, so yeah, 911. Yeah, there's a couple bank robbers. And, you know, this
can
is
you
and that.
Can you bring some pizza? I'm really hungry. Yeah,
maybe SWAT.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Maybe SWAT. Right. Whatever you guys feel.
Right, exactly. Right. You know, that's how he's talking, and you're just like, what's going on?
Like, I'm like, are you worried, sir? Like, no.
No, not at all. There is a gun to my face, though. You know?
Right. he does talk that way, so it really says a lot in the beginning. But I have this, I love that scene. There's multiple scenes like that. There's an action scene in on the moon, and there's a few more after that, too, that are pretty cool.
Yeah,
very cool. Very shot, really beautifully. James Gunn is also very well known for his great, beautiful shots. I mean, remember the jungle in Lost City Z alone, right? On top of that, I read, and I think I saw in a tweet actually, one theory about that scene in the beginning. And the reason I'm going to mention this now is because we could say things without spoilers. But in the beginning, people are saying like, what if when he fell off that tower, he actually died? And or like he passed out or whatever, and the moments of it, and like his journey of the rest of the movie is him experiencing that, like him trying to get past or connect with his dad as a way to like find closure in himself.
That'd be something interesting,
right? And that could explain some of the inconsistencies that happen later on in the movie, which we might get to later.
Yeah,
because there's some stuff that doesn't make sense in the movie. This movie is not like scientifically proof. It's not science proof. It's not like, oh, it could happen. Some of that stuff could happen, Some of that stuff is ridiculous. Some of that stuff is like, why would someone do that for this guy to be able to get away with it? You know, there's some things that doesn't make sense. There's inconsistencies in the movie. And I'm not saying James Gray is a perfect man or anything like that. But he's also like, he's not known for inconsistencies in his movies. And for all I know, if you talk to a historian about what British officers did to conquer the jungles back in the old days, and then they watched Lost City Z, he's probably like, there's like 50,000 inconsistencies in this movie.
Right.
Maybe there is. But the thing is that we value space movies a lot harder, and we rate them a lot harder.
I feel like we do.
A lot harder than we do like a jungle exploration movie.
Very much so.
So, like, I feel like we let him pass more on Lost City Z than this one. People have been nitpicking the fuck out of Ad Astra.
Have they?
As you can imagine.
Yeah.
And some of those I found out myself while I was watching it. Others are like, oh, yeah, I didn't think of it that way. But I'm going to ignore most of them. To almost all of them, except for, like, one or two that I think are key, important stuff that shouldn't have happened. Other than those, I'm going to ignore almost all of them because we really don't care about that. The movie doesn't care about being planet Earth of space. This is a story with a plot, and it's about a man's journey. And this man's journey happens to take him billions of miles from Earth, you know? So, like, it just happens to be that way. And I love the story. I love the movie for sticking to its guns. But I wanted to mention that theory about him actually dying or losing consciousness and plummeting to Earth to his death. And then him envisioning or imagining the rest of the movie to, you know, to get closure from his father and his life.
Right.
At the end of his life there. I think that was cool. What do you want to talk about, though? Like, we talked a little about performances. What did you think of Tommy Lee Jones as a figure in his mind? Because that's what he is in the movie until later on. Much later on, so.
Well, it's interesting. I think it's something that a lot of movies are
next to Buzz Aldrin.
I think it's a he respects the man for what he's done, but as a father figure, I don't think he cares. He cares enough to, or he cares too much, but he's shelled himself out of the emotions, right? Mm-hmm. He doesn't want to feel any emotions for his dad because he's, you know, holds resentment towards him, or whatever the case is.
Do you think emotionless begets emotionless? Like, do you think, like, him feeling that way, the cold, maybe? People might call it cold, the coldness of his emotions. Like, could that be like a self-defense mechanism for his absence in his life?
It does. Up? It does, yeah.
And then, like, he just made it everything 100% of the time kind of thing. And, like, now he, like, you can't see into their life, but being emotionless.
Right. It does feel like that. But at the same time, it's funny because there's parts in the movie where, for example, after that scene in the moon, right, mm-hmm. with the cars, right?
Great.
Right. After that, and, you know, he says something as simple as to somebody, make sure you record the loss of some person or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it's the right thing to say. But it's how he says it.
Right.
You know,
it's the how, yeah.
Definitely. It's the how. It's
like you're reading a text.
Right. Well, the handbook says we should care about the dead.
Right.
Just the recently deceased. So, okay, I guess we should say this, you know.
Well, kind of like a sociopath. Like, he knows he should show he should say something.
Right. Very much so.
Therefore, he says it.
Very much so. So, he says it, exactly. Yeah. When he's like, dude, it's the wrong time. wrong, whatever, everything, right? Feel the room.
Feel the room.
Right.
Feel the moon.
Right. Feel the moon. That whole thing about him and his father, it is almost like, because the father seemed like the same way.
All right, a pioneer also, older pioneer. Right.
But what I do feel like that the father, he does respect the father enough to where he doesn't make his feelings about his father vocal to anybody, not even to himself.
Yeah, because there's a lot of voiceover in the movie,
yes.
I should say. We didn't mention it before. The voiceover just explained his worries. Again, in a very bland, cold way, but he says it. And they explain, like, he questions himself a lot. Really, his concerns is that he questions himself whether or not he should question himself about something.
Right.
But it's kind of like how it is, right? I don't have any quote, like, in my head that he said something. But, like, I remember him talking. He definitely reveres his dad. I think he only sees him as the icon that everyone sees him as because he has no choice, you know?
Right, but I think they see him that, and then he also feels like he needs to see it in a different way, but he doesn't know what way that is. You know?
Yeah, I mean, that way it becomes clear, for sure.
Like, it does, for sure.
But, yeah, he doesn't know himself.
Right.
I almost feel like it's like on one hand, NASA or whoever, maybe it was NASA's space program, one of their space programs, sent this guy, who was like a conjoined with the American military. I know it's like an American military mission, too, like, right? Secret mission, something like that?
Something like that.
They sent him in the hopes of, like, ideally it's to, like, elicit reaction, an emotional reaction from his father.
Uh-huh.
Because they have to send him to Mars to send a telecommunications satellite ray to Neptune, where he's at.
Right.
Right? And it's like oddly confusing. I'm like, why they have to do such a convoluted way? But whatever, you know, I'm sure. Whatever. I don't care if the science doesn't explain it. The point is that this movie says that's how the world is. So I'm cool with that. And at first you think it's for the emotion, like the fact that they're father and son should elicit a reaction. Because they clearly, I knew from the way they picked them, is that from the beginning that it's something bad going on with the father. Something in Neptune's happening.
Right.
And what they figured out is that something in Neptune is happening where like these, what is it like? Electrical rays are hitting the Earth?
Yeah, like electrical storms, some crazy electrical surges.
Right, surges they call it. Hurting other space stations?
Which
hurting,
is what happened in the beginning of the movie.
Yeah.
That's
how that
is. They got a surge, exactly. They lose power, something happens, and then
it's happening more frequently, and things like that, and it doesn't really make sense. It feels alien-y.
It does feel alien-y.
Yeah, and it's funny, because the whole mission that Brad Pitt's father went for is to search for alien life. And because apparently once you pass a certain point in our own solar system, I guess in this case Neptune, you can scan other galaxies to a better degree. That's my understanding.
I think what it said is that with the equipment that we have, mm-hmm. the electromagnetic force of the sun is too strong if I remember correctly. Because I like to pay attention to the random little details like this.
Yeah.
As the electromagnetic sun of the strength of it. Leaves after Neptune, there's like no electromagnetic strength. So in theory, with our equipment that we could use, if we were to do it in Neptune,
right.
we could scan anything, right? And we would have no interruptions with our equipment because there would be nothing, no electromagnetic pull from anywhere or that strong that would interfere with ours. So we could just theoretically scan away or whatever the hell we have, right? And that's the whole reason.
And it scans Neptune. The known universe,
yeah. Or what, yeah. I mean, it's... They do
but it. Not everything, but the known universe.
As much as they can. Right?
As much as we imagine there is.
As much as we imagine
really, there is. Really, that's right. What it is.
Well, I mean,
whatever constellation we can count, that kind of thing.
What else can you do? I mean,
there's a limit to how much we can fucking explore and think of, right?
Right, exactly.
Higgs boson field, everyone.
Which is, yeah, right.
Okay. So, and that's a great idea and a great mission. I love it. And it immediately opens up the idea of alien activity with these surges. So that's in your head a lot. But the movie really does a good job of also making you forget that. And focus in the moments of Brad Pitt's mission.
You know what? I think that, but then once we're told about Brad Pitt's mission, I immediately discarded that. Because
mm-hmm.
I immediately knew it was
I didn't immediately discard it. I discarded it over the course of the movie, but I didn't immediately discard it, no.
Oh, I discarded it right away. Mm-hmm. Okay, never mind.
Well, I mean, I just saying, I don't know where it was going to go.
No, I do agree with
you. But I know James Gray's not that type either.
Well, what's funny is, I just discarded it thinking, well, it's got something to do with the father. And I was just like, and I'm just focused on the father now.
No, yeah.
And I didn't care about, like, thinking about anything else.
I definitely thought that the father's 90% of the movie, for sure. Yeah. But, like, you never know.
Right.
So, I think we should get into spoilers, unless you want to mention something before. Anything you want to say to convince people? Or, no, right. I think we said what we needed.
Sorry, I had a big yawn.
Okay, that's why I said.
I know. You were just stalling. do I want to say anything to convince people? The movie is visually good, visually great.
Fuck yeah, I'll watch it again.
I would definitely recommend you to go watch the movie again for that, or to begin with for that reason.
I might go today, actually.
Oh, will you?
Maybe, yeah.
But other than that, I mean, it's kind of hard for me to recommend you this. The only thing is that you have to not. Because I know a lot of people don't like space for some reason, is that don't get bogged down in details. Like, people get away with things in movies here with people that are just done in Earth. And you're like, that's impossible. A person can't do that. But we don't get bogged down with the details there.
I mean, the general consensus of how bullets work in action movies are always off and wrong.
Well, like, not only that, but just, that also just like the amount of time that we have to fight.
So
and, yeah, a bunch of. Anyways, not even getting into that.
Right.
But yeah, but. Don't get bogged down to random little things like that. Like, that's not how space works. Okay, shut up. Like, you don't know. You don't know either. Like,
none of us are ever going up.
Right. Anytime soon.
I don't think ever.
None of us here.
No. Maybe your kid generation would.
Maybe.
Some of them. You know?
I don't know.
If there's an escape plan.
Yeah, Uber.
Uber space. Uber space. Right. You know, there's a carpooling. I bet your carpooling's mandatory. I mean, it's a lot of wasted jet fuel or whatever they need to get up there. So it's just a strange thing. So I'm getting spoilers. I want to talk about a bit of the world setting and spoilers because it might spoil some of the stuff later on. Anyway, let's get into that starting right now.
You look just like your dad there. He was the first man to the outer solar system. He was a pioneer. But there was much more to him than that.
Please, state your mission objective.
I am attempting to stop an uncontrolled antimatter reaction which threatens our entire solar system.
We're approaching Mars.
Spacecom believes my father is responsible.
We're doing big things up here, real big.
What did he find out there in the abyss?
The enemy up here is not a person or a thing. It's the endless void.
The world awaits our discovery, my son.
Okay, so before we get into the very ending and stuff, Ralph, I want to talk about what do you think about the... Well, there's a lot of factors to this, but what do you think of the world building? And what I mean specifically is that the commercialization of space, specifically the moon.
That's shocking.
But also the idea that... There's a few ideas here, because you can't, like... It feels like humanity is constantly making a new frontier and a new Wild West. You know, you think of the Wild West from the 1800s, right, and so on, and in many ways, and also in when ganglands and cities were kind of a new thing. Also, that's a big one. It's like a Wild West, like people have to write a bunch of laws now, like, what the fuck, what's cocaine, things like that. And then you go into, like, the internet, you know, the Wild West of the internet, how that was in the early goings, and still kind of, in many ways, still kind of the Wild West out there,
right,
with piracy and whatever. There's so many things we have to keep stretching that over.
Yeah.
Now we made it again on the fucking moon. Now our space in general. But the difference here is that you need a lot of people, a lot of money, because a lot of money is involved to traveling, you depend on people to get to space.
Right.
That's a big difference. You can't just get a horse and go into the next town over.
Very much so, yes.
All right, so like, or even steal a horse if you have to buy one. So like, I like that idea, and I like how the movie, for me, completely highlighted it. And what do you think of that?
Well, I like how it was just kind of like a throwaway thing. Mm. It's in your face, don't get me wrong, but it's kind of like a throwaway, like, I felt desensitized. It's funny that I had to think about it until later where... I think someone says your father would be, would kill him, would turn over in his grave if he saw the, like.
Oh, right. Donald Sutherland's character says that.
I think that's what he says to him, right? Your father would turn over in his grave if he saw how the moon is.
Or he'd rather blow it up or destroy it or something like that.
Right, right. And you're like, what's funny is that I didn't think of anything until he said that. And I was like, man, I'm desensitized to it. Like, I'm just like.
Oh, no, I thought of this the second I saw the first Panda Express.
And I was like. Well, I just kind of rolled my eyes to it. I was like, whatever, right?
Well, I did too, and then I went from rolling my eyes to like, why the fuck is this?
Right, well, now it's like trips to space for people to go, like, what did you do on the weekend?
Or, oh, my God. Yeah, or like, remember when that lady's like, would you like a pillow? It'll be $120, remember?
Right.
Just like a regular plane, like, you know, like peanuts, I'd be $7, please.
Very much so, yes.
Yeah, kind of have that.
I don't know. I found it, I found it kind of like off-putting because... I would hope we don't go into space just for that reason. I mean, I guess I don't know why. What's the point?
No, like, I get it. Like, without being in the military or being in NASA space, but me being an astronaut, like, for the exploration of it or, like, looking for something specific that requires you to go to space. Like, say, I want to find the God particle. Okay, go to space. If you want to find alien activity, you have to go to space, right, eventually, or whatever. besides those reasons,
yeah,
for visiting Mars or whatever, for environmental, whatever.
Well, I feel like going to space is just like a cool thing to say, like, well,
right.
It's like why I go to the aquarium now, right? And then I'd be like, well, hey, what did you do at the aquarium? I got to go see and touch the seals, and I paid the extra package to go touch the seals and play with the seals or do X, Y, and Z, bullshit, whatever. You know, it feels like the same thing. It's like I went to the moon. Well, what did you go to the moon for? Well, for the experience of going to the moon, right? It's the same reason why people go to the beaches. What do you go to the beaches for? Because you want to experience the beaches or the sunny weather or whatever, mix of everything. You want to go there, but at the same time, they're like, well, we can't privy you to anything, so we're going to have to entertain you somehow. And in order for you to be here entertainment-wise, we're going to have to include tours of, like, well, we're going to go out, you know, and we're going to show you how this is where Neil Armstrong came and this and that. Yeah. And This is our base location, or whatever.
I know, again, it's a logical hop, skip, and a thing to get there.
I get it, but at the same time, it doesn't feel like we should do that. Do you really need to? How much money are you? Is it profitable? Who is it profiting and why? Who gives a fuck?
How much do you pay a barista in a Starbucks there?
I guess, dude, it's bonkers. Like, it's just, also, it's got to be subpar. Everything has to be subpar.
I would imagine so.
Everything.
How do you steam milk? I mean, probably don't have Starbucks. Okay, stupid. I don't know why I'm going to subpar. I would say that the ideal version of this, if we have to, because I would love to go to the moon. Okay, and let's face it, in my lifetime, that's never going to happen. But if it were to happen, that's probably the farthest I'll ever get to in my lifetime.
Right. I
would love to go there, but I've always thought that the moon or places like that, until properly colonized, I don't know what that feels like.
What if we find
like.
Nazis up there? Anyways,
You know, we'll cross that bridge, probably we have to. That they would be treated like a national park. You know?
Yeah.
It's like the tourism, I'm not saying it doesn't exist. Like, you have walkways in national parks, right? Things like that. That can fucking happen too. And like, everything is like service provided. You have the food that you need, the nutrients you need at all times. But you don't need
The real problem, you know, is like, that whoever gets there first and establishes first.
Well, the thing is that what I like about this movie, it says that there's territories belonging to different countries. Right.
Exactly.
Which is probably a sane way, I guess, ish way of splitting up the moon. But obviously, none of us own anything.
Well, that's the problem. It's
none of us own the planet.
Well,
what the fuck?
What I'm saying, well, but we do feel like we do, right?
Yes, we definitely act like we do.
That's
for sure.
But that's what I'm trying to say, is that as someone's going to go up there and be like, I claim someone already did, right? Went up there. I say that we got here first. That's all they said, right?
Yeah, yeah.
They're not claiming the moon or anything, but let's be realistic.
Yeah.
If China...
it's like the gold rush. This is my stream. I found gold here.
Exactly.
Right.
I mean, it's going to be whoever gets up there first. Well, I already
established... Adopt the highway, everyone.
Right.
Adopt the moon rock.
Once everyone establishes their place, well, I technically own this property here. And now if you want to come into my property, you can see it, and I can do whatever I want with it, and blah, 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 blah.
That's what I was kind of saying in a national park sense. Like, if
the problem is it's shitty, is that that's getting government involved, or that's getting something up to that higher end. What I did appreciate was Mars in this movie. Mars was just like a base.
Well, yeah, because it's so far away. It's probably harder to get there commercially.
Well, hey.
Like a military, like American-Canadian base that they went to specifically. Yeah, it was like,
well, we need it for...
But they mentioned there was a Russian one there, too.
We need it for radar, we need it for this, we need it for whatever.
It's like a jumping off point,
too. And it's like, guess who gets to go there? Personnel who needs to fucking be there. And that's it. And
so like
maybe you can make it to where people can go and take a tour, right? But like, you should make it for like, those are your prospects... Mm-hmm. Who are you're literally
investors,
trying to get investors, people like that. Hey, you want to see where your money's going? This is where it's going. Yeah, it looks bleak. Well, it's fucking Mars. What do you expect, right?
Yeah.
This and that. But you use it for those reasons. And I get we use the moon as like a long range base thing to, you know, to get out or whatever.
Yeah. You're just going to the side.
Which makes sense. It's the closest thing to us.
Yeah.
I mean, just use that because it's easier to get out of the hemisphere or out of the orbit.
It's like Quadis before you get to Mexico City.
Kind of. I mean, if you think about it, it's very much it takes way too much effort to leave here because of our gravity, because of our everything, right? Mm. And compared to the moon. The moon is like, well, we can just do everything at the moon. And it's like, it's a lot better.
You don't need as much propulsion. You don't need as much.
You spend everything way less. Yeah. And that's probably what somebody figured out.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's just tracks.
Right.
Makes sense.
And I get why, but it was kind of shitty too. I mean, thinking about it now... Yeah, it's kind of dumb. Like, I would hate to go to the moon and then someone goes, we just took your picture. Would you like to pay $200 to see your to get your picture? That no, I wouldn't. Like, get the fuck out of my face.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like the whole Disney thing. It felt very Disney-esque, I guess, right?
Yeah, I can see a little bit of that with that. What do you think about the government, like the protocol work at display here? You know, you think of like a movie, like a lawyer movie, a court movie, right? All the paperwork they have to deal, all the research and all the stuff. And get to courtroom. Well, this like one has a lot of protocols.
I feel like you have to. I feel
psychological
like
protocols.
Yeah.
Who can have access to what at any given time, yeah, at any given moment.
Well, I feel like it's something that also, right, you start giving away more and more about yourself. And you have to in these aspects, because now you're, the work you're doing isn't just defining what you do, or isn't just affecting your immediates, whatever. It affects everything. It affects a lot of people. It doesn't just affect you and your surroundings. It affects the surroundings, happens to be the world and then the moon and then the, you know.
Yeah.
So you have to be more scrutinized almost. So, I mean, it makes sense, but we've seen that also already from any astronaut. So it didn't feel much different. Mm-hmm. It just felt like to a higher degree.
Yeah. Well, it got really annoying too when at the end when he hijacks the shuttle from Mars to Neptune.
Right.
Some of that stuff was unbelievable. Here's where the mistakes come in. There are many. For example, like the apparently what I read again, tweets. I'm not sure if they're true. The rings, the rocks, and the rings on Neptune, for example, they will never harm anyone. They're just little rocks, like little rocks. They don't run the same way. He had to grab that shield, remember?
Right.
That door. That's just to make it more dramatic. I didn't care, for sure. Things like that, mistakes like that, I don't give a fuck.
Well, I found it cool that he even thought about that. Because
that's so bad. I'm like, what's he going back for, right? Yeah. I thought he was going to go back in for
maybe. I knew he was doing that whole thing to spin, to get him to
right,
do that.
Yes.
But I was like, why is he taking this thing off?
Right.
And I didn't think about that. I almost thought he's like, he's just not running the risk of getting hit by anything.
Right.
Which wasn't dumb.
Yeah. I get nice, smart guy. The real thing is that I kind of unbelievable when the shuttle was about to take off from Mars to Neptune with that shitty crew. He somehow, like, in the initial blast before the actual blast off, like, he should have been incinerated down there.
Yeah.
I don't understand how he wasn't. Like, I found like, okay, that's kind of unbelievable, but whatever. The one that was really annoying to me was like right before the actual takeoff. These astronauts take off their belts to try to stop this guy. The force would kill them. And it does kill them.
It does kill them.
It's so ridiculous. Yeah. Why would you get off your seat? Why would you? That felt stupid.
I
don't know.
And I get that the force is different because the gravity works different in Mars than it does in Earth.
It's still
a
jolt.
It's not. Well, you get it. It's still a jolt. Yeah. It's not as crazy, right? You can still hold yourself. And it did look like that. I'm not defending the movie. What I'm saying is that it's not as like I can't do anything physically, right? Is that I can still do something. It's just not as much. And you should still have, I do agree that it is a stupid thing considering these guys are supposed to be very smart.
Well, the thing is that, well, we were shown that coat, by the way, it's a great scene, but the monkey scene was great because it just went back in my head. But that co-pilot that now is the captain, the pilot of this particular shuttle from Mars to Neptune, I mean, we saw him. He was a coward. Yeah. Not good on the pressure.
What's funny is that I really thought that he was going to repay him for it and say, no, we'll deal with him after. And they would have just dealt with him, mm-hmm, and not killed or not try to kill him or anything. Mm-hmm. Because he almost had saved his life. And
apparently,
had saved his life.
And the other two, they said that they were just scientists. They seemed like just like, not like truckers on the field or anything, but they were like scientists. They weren't military personnel.
Right.
So I don't know why the movie recycled them. Oh, if they had to, I thought they would be for a good reason, because they just saw this man, the son of that great hero, like, save their lives by landing that shuttle when they got to Mars.
Right.
Why? Where's the backbone for that? You're going to follow orders blindly?
Right.
You met this guy.
Right. I 100% agree with you.
That drove me nuts. That took me out of the movie.
That actually took me out of the movie for
sure. Yeah.
Well, that bothered me a lot because... Yeah. Mainly the co-captain or the new captain,
yeah,
was because of the fact that, like, dude, he just saved your ass, and he said, "I'm not going to record this. Do you understand why?"
Right,
right. I'm trying to make it look good,
right,
on you.
He like, made sure you got this next gig, if anything.
Right, and then it's funny because then they're like, "Well, yeah, we lost three other ships docking." Remember, that's what they even said it
because of the search.
Because of the search, right?
Yeah, it's just inconsistent behavior for me. But before that, the original pilot sounded just like a fucking airline pilot.
Dude, he did a great job.
You almost start talking about the weather, like the weather on Earth, like it's about to rain. He sounded just like a fucking pilot. He was cool though. His death was very strange. That scene was strange when he goes into that Mayday call.
Right.
Transponder, whatever. I don't know what they call it. When they went to that Mayday and that ship was like empty, creepily empty, and but things are moving or there's some movement going on. I'm like, what's going on? It was like, are we in a horror movie now? Is this where the horror? I don't know what.
Very much so. Yes.
For all I know, the rest of the movie's in this fucking place. I have no idea. And there's like these, animals, these apes, right? Who like were scientific research, right? Apes, something like that. They managed to get out somehow and kill everyone.
Yep.
And kill the pilot. It was so gruesome. It was cool. It was a pretty cool scene. But in a way, that scene made me realize that a lot of the stuff in these movies, some of the scenes in these movies, are there for no reason. I mean, what is that scene there to tell us that doesn't already succeed by the rest of the movie?
Right.
And I'm thinking, like, it's just scenery, right? For the rest of the, like, showing you how this world is. Like, the way they show the pirates attacking the moon truck, whatever, they're in the moon, right? It's like that, right? It's not useful.
I mean, besides saying that there's everything telling you not to go.
Right. Also, I thought Brad Pitt's character outranked the captain.
It did. He did outrank
the captain. He could have. I'm saying he could have like just said, like, no, we're not going to take the
No, remember, he, just, remember the, he they do mention why.
Oh, yeah. They said because he would have to disclose. Right. So it's right. He would have to disclose the reason.
He goes, the mission. Within your rights to take command of the ship as you have the rights to.
Yeah.
We would have to tell us your mission quarter. Your mission.
And it's a top secret mission. Right. Okay. That's why he went.
That's why he's like, proceed accordingly. I'll join you.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Never mind. I forgot. But I remember.
Throwaway lines, Oscar.
Well, can't keep track of all of them.
I know. It's hard.
Okay, now let's get to the ending.
Okay.
Tommy Lee Jones. Tommy Lee.
Tommy looks like he's dying. Looks like he's been out there for 70 plus years. His
face has always looked like he's dying.
Yeah, he's been a while, yeah.
His face looks weathered.
Nothing U.S. Marshals anymore.
No. No. Even then, he still had that. Okay. What it... man, that whole thing is insane. I think I asked you last, so I'll go first on this one. It was great, because the whole time... I wanted to know the answer to that question. No joke. Even though it's not part of the movie,
yeah.
It's not the main part of the movie, I still want to know what this movie wanted to say about it, right?
Yeah.
I know it's not real, but you spend so much time in space, 2 hours in space with this guy, you kind of believe a little bit.
Yeah.
So, like, I was like, where's the aliens? Where are the aliens at?
Right.
And obviously, that's a sexier response than the movie was caring to understand or caring to give me a shit about. But so it says that there isn't. But that's the point of the movie.
Intelligent life, anyway.
Yeah. Intelligent life, yes. Right. And I love the visuals we get out of all these other planets that look so different and cool and strange and stuff. But, like, the sad, not sad answer is that there isn't. And in the known universe, we're the only intelligent life.
Right.
And that took days. Actually, it's been a week since I've seen it. This whole week to, like, grasp the many kinds of answers or the kinds of opinions I can have on that. And I settled on a more positive one, mm-hmm. for sure, as like my result, my test results. Because there's so many ways to take that ending. So many ways to take Tommy Lee Jones' reaction, to take Brad Pitt's reactions to Tommy Lee Jones' reaction about the fact that he's alone out there, he killed his crew, and he's killing the rest of the world. I still don't know if he was doing it on purpose
didn't seem like he was. Seemed like he lost control of their antimatter reaction or whatever, and it just spews out these surges now. Right. Yeah. That get amplified because there's nothing to stop them.
Right.
And then they're coming this way.
It's like a small wave that starts in the middle of the ocean, and by the time it hits the beach, it's like
right,
a barge.
Right,
like
that. Very much so, yes.
Yeah. But for space. And it didn't seem like it was on purpose, so that's good, I guess. It's not like a Sunshine deal. Remember Sunshine?
Yeah.
Where the guy wanted to kill the world.
Well, it was like direct actions because he got into fights.
Oh, it's because of his ego, for sure.
For sure, yeah.
Oh, yeah, but it's not like direct, like, you know what I'm saying, not on purpose.
Yes.
Yeah, all this stuff that's in there, so many ways you could take and interpret so many variables, actually, surprisingly so many variables about this one question. And how does this one question, my thinking was, after I saw the movie, the question being, are there aliens out there? does it matter to the main story, which isn't about whether or not they're aliens, mind you. It's how does it relate to the main story about this guy getting past his own shit, essentially. Like, all these questions he has about himself, all the reasons why he's so determined to get to Neptune, the reasons he might want to see his father that isn't, like, I mean, if he shows he doesn't care, does he actually care? He clearly cares. You know, things like what are his reactions, right? And they really do connect. The fact that we are alone in the known universe is the reason to carry on that life, that torch, so to speak.
Right.
Right. It's not because we're alone that we can say, fuck it, like his father kind of was kind of reacting to.
Right.
Not because his father couldn't believe it, right? He just could not believe it, that there is no aliens. But Brad Pitt saw it the most positive way, and I kind of see his way in the end. So that's why I really like the ending. What about you?
I agree. No, I think I saw it before you did. It didn't take me as long to...
I had so many thoughts.
Well, I know, I hear you, but I do find it that it's... Well, it clicks for Brad Pitt a lot faster than it does... His father never clicks, right?
Yeah, I guess.
Well, what... I mean, he says it right there in the movie where he's like... He goes, you found an answer. The problem is maybe it's not the answer you wanted. He's like, but the answer you got is we're the only intelligent life out there, and that's all you need to know. And now we should just focus on ourselves, and we shouldn't focus on anything else. And we should just be like, since we're the leading intelligent life in anything, right?
Yeah.
We might as well live up to those standards and be up to the fact that we need to keep on being the only, not keep on being the only ones, but we need to.
Which is the most wholesome version of this end.
Right. Which we need to, as humans, keep being human and keep being, you know, alive, staying alive and, you know, being, it is a precious thing. We are something unique to not only our world, but we're unique to everything, you know?
Yeah.
So it.
I mean, we're that snowflake. We're that precious flower.
We are a precious flower, yeah. Very much so, that blooms every so often or whatever.
Yeah.
And, you know, I say blooms every so often because you don't get an Einstein every year. But, no. You know, maybe you get them every century.
Yes, right.
So we are very unique in that aspect. And, yeah, we should – we've already accomplished this much.
Yeah.
Like, why can't – now that we have no impending doom of random people coming over to whatever, right, or anything crazy like that, why don't we look to us? And maybe we could look to colonizing things later, but
– Looking inward.
Looking inward, right.
Yeah, no, that's a very, like, inner space feeling in that sense.
Right.
Also, you know, it's funny because the trauma that Brad Pitt's character will never probably admit to himself, although probably by now, by the end of the movie, he probably would, is that, you know, the father connection, the reason he acts away, the reason his blood pressure is always perfect, things like that.
Right.
Is that it informed him to make this rational decision, this more positive decision about humanity, and that answer, that the fact that we're alone, made him he took that answer better because of his obsession, non-obsession with his father.
Right.
You know, like, it was informed by his, whatever makes him fucked up, whatever makes him, you know, harder to be married with, or harder to be friends with, or harder to employ, right? Whereas Tommy Lee Jones' character was almost entirely driven by not the need to answer the question, but the need to discover alien. Like, it wasn't that
right.
For him, it was like a thesis statement. I'm going to prove that there's aliens. But, like, in reality, he's like, there are aliens out there. I'm just going to find them. Like, that's what he was thinking. Yeah. His ego drove him into that point. He never could let go.
There was always another, well, now the unknown universe. Like, whatever I can't imagine, whatever we can't fathom, what about those? Yeah. And you're like, well, God, what more do you need, you know, currently?
Right. And, and he had a very, like, successful, like, big, Tommy Lee Jones, he had a very big ego death in the movie when he tells his son this information. And his son, react, you know, tells him, bam, back, what you just said earlier.
Right.
But him as a character, when we meet him, he was so unpredictable to me. Like, I had no idea what he was going to do. I don't know if it was going to turn like a big father versus son thing. I don't know what was going to happen. The movie takes a much more like a unpredictable approach, in that nothing big happens necessarily, but he decides to say fuck it and kill him, like go onto space and untether himself. Why do you think he waited to that point instead of doing it earlier or reacting? You think he just reacted late and just waited for him to put the suit on?
Who, his...
His father, why? Yeah, choose that.
I think his father just was just trying to be like, I guess the least I can do to my son is let him take me back.
Hmm.
And then, yeah, I think he was just numb, probably just going through the motions, and he finally was like, I can't go back. I just, there's no way. I mean, and then he just lets it go, you know?
Yeah.
It's opportune time. Also, he saw another way out.
Yeah.
But without harming anybody else except for his son.
Well, and the thing is that he never saw it that way. Apparently, he never even thought of going back.
Right.
Or he never thought of his son. 30 years? You fucking kidding me? Or whatever long it's been? That's insane. But yeah, you know, I can see people are weird that way sometimes. I mean, I haven't met people like that, I don't think. So I don't know how it feels, but
right.
It's not unbelievable. Yeah, and then, you know, he goes back to Earth somehow. I mean, that long journey is probably another movie's worth, probably. But he gets back to Earth somehow. He's not in trouble, which is strange, because we never stopped. But maybe
I don't know, man.
They probably classify him as a hero, maybe to save PR face.
I mean, yeah, he comes back and he's like, if you came back empty-handed, we would have just been like, it was an empty shuttle. Like, managed to try to come back, launched or whatever, bullshit. We lost the crew. We would have shot this shit down. Mm. Something would have happened to this fucking thing, right?
Yeah.
I think so. But the fact that he came back with information from them.
Oh, yeah. He took the data and stuff. But also, you know, the fact that the surgeon should have stopped. Right.
Very much so. Yeah. Maybe he did do whatever was necessary. Yeah. I love how it was just a super small bomb.
That's all you need.
That's all it was.
Oh, yeah. Right. You don't need much. If you've seen The Expanse, they do a good job of showing warfare in space.
Yeah, I've seen some of it.
And this is part of that. That's where I thought, like, oh, yeah, you don't need that much at all. Just a projectile. Just explode things into projectiles. That's all you need.
That's basically it.
Yeah. Really cool stuff. But he comes back, and ideally he's going to rekindle his life. It's like he is connected. You know, it tries to have the same exact feeling that I think the end of Gravity feels. But Gravity does it way better because it's all in the moment feeling.
Yes.
You know, when she gets back to Earth in that movie, spoiler alert, that she makes it back to Earth, everything feels instantly alive and worth it.
Right.
You know, where the cold is and dead of space and all the machinery she was surrounded is sucked.
Yeah.
Like, this movie tries to do that, and it does it just more somber, just more low-key. What do you think of Liv Tyler?
Poor girl.
Yeah, she's like a...
I just feel like we had... Why?
A doting wife in the background.
We should have just had any other person, any random actress. You could have grabbed off the street that was pretty to fit this role, because she has like two words of dialogue, I think, in the movie.
Yeah, or at least like, don't show her. We were talking about this after
blurry the movie. Blurry face or something.
Like, show pictures or something. Why are you showing...
Pictures, blurry face, never show her. Never have focus on her.
Right.
And it would have been just an image of he's obviously with a girl.
It could end with him like just giving her a call. And that's it.
I get we her know being there, but I just feel like she's unused.
Oh, yeah. It looks like we got oddly too much and not enough.
I mean, yeah, right. Exactly. Very much so, yeah.
So, yeah, that stuff didn't work out for me. But overall, this movie is pretty great. No movie's perfect. But, yeah. Really love this movie. I can't wait to watch it again. I know Lexi wants to see it. I saw it by myself the first time, so she wants to see it for sure because she likes that space stuff. So I may watch it again this week. So that's it for our review of Ad Astra. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll review our second film, which is going to be a much shorter movie. It's Rambo Last Blood. There's Last Blood of Rambo. It's his last time he bleeds, basically. So stay with us.
Okay.
I've lived in a world of death. I've watched people I've loved die. Some fast with a bullet. Some not enough left to bury.
Yeah, I'm gonna take my horse to the old town road. I'm gonna ride till I can't no more.
All these years I've kept my secrets. But the time has come to face my past. And if it comes looking for me, they will welcome death.
Rambo must confront his past and unearth his ruthless combat skills to exact revenge in a final mission.
In a final mission.
Rambo, Last Blood. This is a movie starring Sylvester Stallone, Paz Vega, Yvette Monreal. I would say Monreal. Sheila Shah. Let me get the two guys. Hold on. Sergio Perez Mencheta. And I want to say Oscar Haenda. Hainada. Yeah. Directed by Adrian Grunberg, whoever the hell that guy is. I think he did. No. Hold on.
I think he did.
He did Get the Gringo that came out. And then he also, Here on Earth, some episode. Well, he's doing some other stuff. But he's done some random, he's been in the film world for a while. Anyways.
Okay.
I went second last time, so I get to go first this time around.
Ah.
You like that one, right?
I do.
Rambo Last Blood. I guess Burma isn't a war zone anymore.
No?
It should still be. I didn't like this movie.
okay.
I didn't like this movie as a, like, it was, I mean, listen, I like aspects of this movie. The action, A+. I love it. It's on point. My clavicle hurts just thinking about it.
My clavicle fucking hurts. Just you saying clavicle.
Right. So, I mean, it's just that's phenomenal, right?
Yeah.
I mean, his meat hands fucking.
Yeah.
So just ridiculous. I love it. I love that aspect. I also like the fact that it doesn't, for lack of a better word, pussyfoot around sensitive subjects. I feel like it's it talks about things and it just kind of delves in. This is the reality of the situation we're dealing with, and I'm like, oh, okay, cool. And that's what Rambo's always been, I think. Talking about subjects, stuff like that.
Yeah.
And like, for example, just mass murders in Burma, right?
Yeah. Kidnapping one of those people.
Same thing when he's at home, when he comes back home, and during all the original Rambo stuff. I don't think I've seen two or three. I've only seen one. So stuff like that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So this movie, though, just didn't. How do I say this? Wasn't interesting to pay attention to, for the fact that it was very bland. Yeah. I mean, I think I could have wrote this at the night before it was due, like, you know, like the screenplay or whatever, the dialogue. And it was just like, it felt like a very B movie for what should be like maybe in the B category, but it should have had A effort. You know what I'm saying? Like, it felt like I was watching a Machete movie, you know? But
okay.
But that movie is meant to be that,
yeah,
right? And we know it, and the movie knows it itself, right? So it does it on its own,
yeah,
right? This movie was like, no, we're going to try hard here. And I was like, yeah, but you're not. And it just wasn't. And it didn't work out. Right? I felt like they also didn't really try. They gave it the old college try, which is really not trying at all. Just bullshitting your way through until you pass with a C, which is what I always thought a college try was. So, yeah. Lackluster in that aspect. It was hard to stay awake in the movie theater.
Oh, for you?
Yes.
I guess, yeah. Harder to care means kind of harder to stay focused, right? That makes sense. Yeah. I guess I didn't have that specific sleep trouble.
Well, I was just getting out of work, but yeah.
Yeah, no, I get it. I'm on the similar boat. I really like the action. I would say it's almost worth it, because it's the meat of the action is at the end, obviously, for obvious reasons. This is a hardcore Taken, I kind of call it. The girl, who is not his daughter, per se, but like the girl that he, you know, protects or whatever, his like sort of daughter, gets kidnapped. In this case, is Mexican like dealers or sex slave traders, some whatever they call them, and that leads into him getting. You think it's just to get her back. You think the movie is about getting her back, but it really isn't. It's about revenge, and it's insane. And the movie doesn't, it doesn't hold back, and I love that about it. But it is hardcore in the sense that it is more brutal, more brutality, like on a visceral level. It's definitely more than Taken. But also, like, it's not like one thing I do like about the Rambo is they never show Rambo to be any more smarter or any more dumber, honestly, than he's ever been in the movies.
Right.
Right. He's just a really good soldier. He's a really good killer. Like, that's it. He's not like, he doesn't know how, you know, the world works down there, for example, things like that, which doesn't come out in good faith for the script.
No, it doesn't.
But it's like, who would walk in that place? Like, come on. Like that when he gets to the compound the first time he gets beat up. And like I'm like, that's insane. The movie does take a lot of like just to make the runtime feel like 90 minutes, I guess. I don't know why they, it seems like they overdid some stuff.
Yeah.
I don't even think we should have spoilers for this movie. But the action at the end was really cool. Not the end, the third act or whatever, the 20-minute action sequence, you know, and the
super cool.
And the tunnel. We all saw the tunnels coming back. It was so obvious. A lot of the movies are pretty obvious. The only surprising thing is involving that daughter person and how people left the scene, so to speak. That was crazy. That was cool. It surprised me a little bit. I didn't expect that. But yeah, it's fucked up. It's just a level. It's like fucked up and a rewarding amount of vengeance. It's like, you know, it has a 13 Assassins kind of feel. Remember that movie?
Vaguely.
That Takashi Miike movie about these. It takes place during feudal Japan. The first act of the movie is showing you how much of a horrible monster, disgustingly violent person that Japan feudal lord is. So that way, when the 13 Assassins are assembled to take him down, you feel it's worth it. You need them.
Yeah.
Right? Like, all the violence is worth it to take this fucking asshole down.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? This movie does a similar feel to it.
It does, yeah.
So, yeah. And I think nothing special beyond that. The acting's not any better. Rambo is obviously, he's acting lesser because he's older and it's just like, has to move less.
He moves like Jason Voorhees moves.
Yeah, kind of, yeah. I can see that. it's whatever. The script's so bad. The writing is so whatever, universally tenuous. Yeah. It's a Rambo movie. It's the last one, I guess. I mean, it's not great. It doesn't go off with a whimper either, but like it doesn't go off with a bang, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like as far as quality.
Well, what's funny is I do appreciate the ending because he says like even though he's lost everything, mm-hmm. he's like, I still live for them, you know, like I live for
yeah.
and stuff like that. Which is cool because I mean he's made that his mind about that a long time ago
for sure.
So yeah, but yeah, actually, what's cool?
I think I said everything I wanted to.
I mean,
I guess we could say like, oh, remember that scene where he takes? Yeah, cool. But like, come on, you can just watch the movie and see a better version than me telling.
There's a clavicle scene. That's all you need to know.
The clavicle scene. Yeah, and that's in the first act. No, it's like halfway through the movie. But yeah, I thought it was so stupid.
Yeah, it's pretty rough. It is like the almost, if you want to say it, the Mexican Taken. Because it does talk about that in American form, right? Because I think we've seen movies about that also, but they're foreign movies, right? And mm-hmm. we pay less attention to foreign movies than we do non-foreign movies.
Well, that's true of most countries, I
mean. Right, of course. I think it's predominantly here, though. I think.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Right, we enjoy it. We enjoy not caring about them. That's the thing.
Right. We enjoy not caring about anybody else, but everybody else caring about us.
Yeah.
Very much so. So, yeah, that's predominantly in the movie. So, like I said, I overall like that it talks about that it doesn't really walk around the eggshells on it. Mm-hmm. You know, it just kind of goes into it like, this is how fucked up they are. And it's plain and simple. It is very visually unpleasing to watch some of the stuff. And they do kind of like, you know, move the camera away to certain stuff, and they don't actually show everything, but they allude to a lot of stuff also.
Yeah.
But yeah, other than that, I mean, action scene, the very last one is totally worth it. Some stuff in between also is worth it. Like, it does remind you. And also, I did have like a, what's it called? I was curious as to what we were going to do with Rambo here. But it was, like I said, it was a vengeance thing. It was a revenge kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
So that was cool. So.
Essentially, yeah. And that's all we got. It's 10 minutes only.
I think that's our shortest one.
It might be our shortest one. It's really that much, guys.
There's nothing else to talk about.
It's really that much in this movie.
It's a short movie, man. I mean, it's
a solid 90.
Yeah.
That's it. That's all I got. Yeah, I don't know, man. But that's it. So that's our review. Fuck it. That's our review of Rambo: Last Blood. Check it out or don't check it out. If you were gonna see it, you have seen it. You would see it. That's it. If you not interested in that kind of movie, you don't watch it. Trust me, it's not a better version than anything else. So I would just check out the Burma ones. Way better. I found that more satisfying.
Anyway, me too.
I remember finding it more satisfying. Yeah. Oh, the first Rambo, the first one, First Blood, is an amazing movie. That's a legit good movie. Like, the rest are not legit good movies, but they're legit good action movies, give or take, variants. But, like, the first one's a great movie, Vietnam example and all that. It's great stuff. But just check that one out instead. Anyway, that's it for that. We're going to take a break here. When we come back, short ass break, we're going to review our last film, which is a documentary on Netflix called American Factory. Stay with us.
We stand here today with a plant that's closing, but I'm extremely proud of the people that work in this plant here.
For a year and a half, I didn't have anything.
We lost our home. We lost a vehicle.
I have struggled to get back to middle class again.
This is a historic project that is going to help grow this community, give people jobs, and give a future to your kids and my kids.
Where you sit today used to be a General Motors plant, and now there are over 1,000 employees working here.
Is this a union shop?
It is our desire to not be.
We hope someday to get this good.
In post-industrial Ohio, a Chinese billionaire opens a new factory in the husk of an abandoned GM plant, hiring 2,000 blue-collar Americans. Early days of hope and optimism give way to setbacks as high-tech China clashes with working-class America. This is American Factory, a Netflix documentary directed by Stephen Bognar and Julia Reichert. This is, I mean, can't really tell you who stars because fucking who cares? It's a documentary. Nobody big. Anyways, American Factory Oscar will give a quick snippet,
short
version of, because he has seen the movie before, and he did a mini real little review once already, so he's going to give the short version of his first thoughts of the movie. Go ahead.
My overall thoughts on this movie is that it's pretty good, very very fascinating. Yeah, I think this movie falls into the fascinating category of culture clashing
for sure.
It's very modern. It's very real. It covers both sides and different angles on both sides of the issue of these people. I mean, I should say, not the issue of these people. And while the film kind of focuses in a time period of this plan from open to a certain time, not till present day, for example, it just covers a few years, and it shows quite a bit of humanity. You know, this is one of those documentaries that show quite a bit of human civilization, humanity in general, how we work, how we function, how we can't work with each other, how we can indeed, how we want to. It's good. It's a very good documentary. It's a very universal documentary. It's a documentary that anyone on Earth can understand a lot of it, most of it, and then can empathize too.
Right.
Yes. So I really like it.
Okay.
Yeah. Short.
That's short, right. Short. Very much so, yes. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'm going to say the same thing to, it's interesting. I'm going to basically say the same thing to you about what you just said. It is a cool documentary to watch. Actually, I'm very surprised of the amount that we get in the Chinese version, or the Chinese perspective, should I say, not version, which is kind of cool. I didn't expect to see that. I feel like they're way more closed doors. Mm-hmm. They do a lot of dealings behind closed doors, and we got a lot of stuff that I didn't think was going to be possible to get.
Right.
And then obviously in Americans, we just give two fucks about cameras in front of our faces. So just to have it, yeah, we'll do it.
Let's do it.
Right. It was cool to kind of capture also like the moments of, like the early moments of this factory starting, you know?
Right. When they're getting all the equipment in, they're like, so much stuff here, man.
Right, exactly. Very much so. And so it was cool to watch. It is a cool, like, perspective thing, culture clash, work ethic, very much so.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Difference to watch, to see, and just to kind of, like, to experience. It is shitty what happens, you know, for the whole GM plan to close and everything like that. So, yeah, it was a cool, really cool documentary, very informative to know that
I think even though the movie does feel like it does feel like it ends in a weird tone, because you can take it however you want to see it, right? It ends in a weird tone. I overall think it's kind of cool what this company did that came in, the Fuyao company, and established roughly 2,000 jobs, give or take, I think, by the end of this documentary.
Yes.
To a place that needed, obviously, to give jobs, that needed jobs because people didn't have them anymore.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's what I overall think of the movie.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to have a spoiler session again for this one.
It's kind of weird to have a spoiler about it.
Right. But I will say that there's a few things we can go in order of. For example, like not just like the people that they follow through, but for example, what do you think of the political elements of this movie that I don't think it actually overtly talks about? It's not there on purpose, but there's no way to not politicize this movie. It's just too easy. It's too much. You can think of only... I can see a lot of people are thinking this movie only in political terms. I don't see it that way. My main thing is the human side, the empathizing side, the culture side. But it can be easily politicized. And what I'm talking about specifically is the fact that a lot of these people, and throughout the movie, a lot of these American workers in Ohio, they miss the old GM plan. They miss the old days of having that stable job that paid more. Considerably more, they mentioned. They kind of say it that way, considerably more.
Well, it was like over two times the amount.
I guess so, yeah.
She said she made $29 an hour and change. And then with what's-her-name made $12, $13 an hour. So that's over two times the amount.
Right, and the dollar hasn't been like decreasing or hasn't, you know, you need more of it now than it was then. Anyway, and... everyone misses that the old days of that factory world life, and the political thing is that the only way to revitalize it in our current climate is if the movie is feeling like it's like those old days are long gone. No way to sustain that kind of thing anymore. Our country's not built for that anymore, and that this Ohioans are firsthand at experiencing that kind of behavior and that kind of stuff. And furthermore, right, that it has to take an international foreign country or whatever to come in to provide them some of that, a fraction of what they used to make of that old American dream.
Right.
Right. And that is a lot of political stuff in it, rolled up in it, into why that's allowed, why this is seen as like a good thing. I know everyone's excited when Fuyao first opens, but... everyone knows that that's why they're here. They're here the way we are there for them to make our sneakers, kind of thing. Like, it's for cheaper,
right? Well, it's got to do something for them, right? So it's a tit for tat. It's the reason why did Toyota come here? Makes sense. It makes more sense for them to build it here and to pay us to do it than it does for them to build it somewhere else and then have it shipped to us, right? Because it's just stupid, because now you're paying tariffs on what the product you're selling on and this, this, and that, and blah, 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 and taxes. Right. It makes more sense for them. Yes, we do this in all their countries as well. Mm-hmm. We ask for them, you know, to build us stuff because it's cheap labor. That's what we get from them. That's what we have them build it. And they're coming over here. Maybe it's not as cheap labor as they're used to, right?
Yeah.
It's still maybe a little bit more on the pricier side, but at the same time, it makes more money off of them because they're made turning a profit, as in like, well, we don't have to ship shit out. And all of a sudden we're selling it as a local selling, you know? So.
No, yeah, I can see the value, the economical value of it. However, I'm so woefully undervalued I don't know anything about this kind of stuff, the economy stuff. Like, I understand bare bones of it. I understand bare bones of the political angles of this. I can maybe acknowledge it, but that's as far as I go. I don't know how complicated it must be as to how it came to be this good and this bad at the same time for these people.
Right.
But the movie really stays in the trenches of all the workers. Some of the managerial stuff, but not mainly the workers on both sides. And one of my favorite elements of this movie is that it's even-handed. It shows the Chinese side as much as the American side.
Yeah. Well, what I find funny is that obviously the Chinese workers just – they work an exuberant amount, right?
Yeah.
You're talking about they say they work 6 days a week minimum, yeah. sometimes seven, right? Mm-hmm. Or they are off. What do they say? I'm off like four.
2 days a month, I think.
2 days a month, something stupid. Sometimes more because of holidays
right.
or whatever the case is. But they're investing and they're like, they sacrifice themselves for their families. It's like, I work because I have a family. I have a wife and kid and they get to grow and they get to do this and they get right. to do all these extra things because I sacrifice myself. You know, and yeah. maybe 3 years down the line, I'll get to have more days off and I'll get to go see them
yeah.
and spend like a week with them and I'll see how their progress is going 3 years later. But it's a big sacrifice. We never would do that here.
Never. You know? That's insane.
Never. Exactly.
To us.
It is insane. Well, it is insane. I think it's insane in general to begin with, right? But at the same time, they're willing to sacrifice a lot more than we are. But I feel like they also invest a lot, way more into them. Look at the difference between factories. We're supposed to have the American one, right? Is a newer one, so you would think it'd have more state of the art stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which makes sense. And a lot of it did seem that way, right?
Yeah.
But overall, in comparison to how the one in China had their main factory, that main factory looked like it was fucking like Apple Industries or whatever. It looked like, yeah, no, we own this whole freaking town,
yeah,
right? And it's like the town's ours, right? Essentially, like, this place is spotless, this place is this place is, you know, we have our Christmas parties or our end of the year party or holiday party, whatever the hell we're having. It's an all-out thing. People perform and do this and do that, and everyone's yeah. invested in it, and it's a gigantic thing. And that's a big disparity that you see, and it feels like they never, you would think they would bring that, like, hey, we have this that we do with our, you know, peoples, and then they just throw them like some little shitty party. And it's like with just fold out tables and, oh yeah, there's a super small Christmas and tree. And
the tablecloths.
Right. Well, you see the disparity also at the very end of the movie when they're leaving. Everything is very clean.
Yeah.
Their whole premises, everything in comparison. And everything looks like well maintained and well done. High quality stuff. I feel like it looks more high quality. And over here, it's just like, yeah, it's just a regular barn door or whatever bullshit. You know, it doesn't feel like it is state of the art. It feels less than.
Yeah.
In comparison.
But also in comparison, you think of safety guidelines. They're like opposite land.
They are. Well, for them, it's just like, just don't get hurt.
Right. Just right.
That's the way they see it.
You know, and in a way, I really do appreciate that. We have way too many. Like, it's like for us, in order for us to goddamn function, we need a sign for everything. We need a sign. It's not obvious. Like, if you're about to go to a crossroad, if there's no stop, you know, like, you're still not going to look to make sure there's no cars coming. It doesn't take – you don't have to be a genius to foresee other cars coming. You know, but we need a sign for everything, you know. And that goes with the factory living, right? You think of there's some things I agree with the American side. For example, like those ladies taking apart the glass.
Dude.
When they go visit the Chinese plant.
Yeah.
And they're like, because
they separate the type of glass.
Right. They're flabbergasted by the fact that they're not wearing anything protective. Were they wearing gloves? I don't even know. Oh, like simple gloves. I don't know if it was like the
It was like vinyl gloves. And they're like, they're not wearing glass resistant gloves.
Right.
And you're like, how do you not wear? And
for me, that is insane because an accident will just happen. It will happen. You're there all the time.
You're asking for an accident.
Right. That's gonna happen. You can't control everything all the time. You will cut.
It's like watching Chernobyl all over again.
Oh my god!
And everyone going like, go check inside that thing.
Right.
If I check, I'm gonna die. Go check inside.
He checks, and then 2 hours later, he's dead.
He's dead. Right.
Right. That's a very good example.
Yeah.
So on that front, I'm on American side for sure. We definitely need protection with the goggles and all that. I get that. Well,
that's why we have practices and standards set up, like OSHA violations. OSHA itself. They even say this place is too narrow for people. You should increase things, right? And so, well, you got, and they're looking at it the perspective of like, well, we have skinnier people, we have
shorter people,
smaller people,
right?
It's not just skinnier, but it's a big difference. And you're like, well, the American person is a bigger person, you know. In comparison.
Yeah, the guy was saying the factory owner was like, yeah, Americans are fatter.
Right. Well, they say it in the beginning of the movie when they're like, oh, they're slower than us. Their fingers are fatter. Their things, so can't get into like things that we're used to. So we have to work around that. And they're like, oh, okay. And no one says it, they don't.
No, they want to do it right. They want to do a good job. They don't want to.
Well, what's funny is that one says like, well, because of that, they suck and they're idiots and this isn't. No,
but
one
it does
that.
Get there with time.
It does get there with time. Right. Well, because now people frustrated. People get frustrated, and then it's a mixture of like, hey, you're frustrated, we're frustrated, you're getting hurt. You're like, well, you guys aren't setting up guidelines for us. You're just And it's hard because we ask you, and you're just like, yeah, 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 just go do it. And there's a language barrier, obviously, right?
Yeah.
And the reality of it is that they're losing, like, there's something lost in translation.
Yeah.
Right? And they're expecting, like, people need this job, and they're going to come in, and they're going to be work, work, work. And not everyone's built like that.
Yeah.
And that's the thing about the United States is that there's always another option. You know, for well, it feels like there's always another option. It feels like we can always do something about it and go live an American dream somewhere and figure out whatever.
It's not easier to move to another state here probably than it is to another province over there, because without the lack of family or lack of structure, support.
Right.
And over here, like if you don't have one big job, like in a factory job, I almost said American factory, like a factory job, you can't, if you want to, you can work three shitty jobs to make the same.
Right.
Or two shitty, maybe, whatever. Like, you can, there are options. Sucky options, but different options. And over there, it's not quite the same. And they're used to having more productivity based on this equipment. And they're not getting that in the American side because we have all these guidelines. Well, also, we have, let's face it, we, as a country, we're spoiled. I mean, we're kind of like a little spoiled, I would say. Maybe not in everything and not in the exact exaggerated way, but on some stuff, for sure. Or we're maybe spoiled or entitled, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
We expect a certain thing.
Yeah.
You know, we expect our houses a certain size. You know what I'm saying? Things like that. And that goes as part of the clashing, too. But as I was saying earlier, on one hand, with the glass, I understand the American side. But on the other hand, like, Jesus Christ, just watch out with the thing. It's right there. You know where it is. Why do you need me to write a guideline or put a sign on there? Just fucking don't hit your head on that beam or
right.
Like, just don't do it. Like, I don't understand. Right. Why do we need to fucking cater to every stupid idiot out there that get hurt? You know what I'm saying? That's what it is. It feels that way too.
Yeah.
On both sides.
Yeah.
So, like, I understand. I understand both sides, really.
Yeah.
And that was one of the most fascinating elements of the movie.
Wait, but what did you think about that one guy that we follow early in the movie? That he was there since the beginning and that he got let go because he couldn't pull up something on the computer? Fast enough. It took him
Took him too long to type or whatever.
To pull up whatever he needed to pull up fast enough.
Mm-hmm.
And they let him go for that because he said it was due to work.
Well, I think those are kind of a scare tactics. That's what it seems like.
Setting examples.
Right. Setting examples. You think of that other guy later on in the movie who, one of the Chinese workers, maybe like a middleman on the floor, was like, see this picture of this guy? Like
he's not going
to
be here.
He's not going to be here tomorrow because he wants to unionize. He told me that he was disappointed with the whatever. He says something not much anyway, and they were gonna fire him for that. He's like, and he was kind of proud of that. He's like, oh, he's gonna be fired tomorrow because he told me this.
Yeah,
you know, things like that. Surprisingly no. But yeah, that was and then when they changed management, because they had American managers, mm-hmm. and they changed them all to fucking Chinese only when they turned it over after the union strike, whatever the fuck it was.
Yeah,
that was those are all scare tactics. They're all ways to get their way that they want to, without spending more. Like, they don't want to spend more on the worker. They want to, like, make them more comfortable. You know, they want to make them more efficient.
Right.
Than, you know, whatever. I don't know. Yeah, that's what it was. That's how I feel it was. Do you feel like it was anything different?
No. Yeah. No, it was. I did feel scare tactics-wise, and I felt like they were setting an example for the guy who they got rid of. Mm-hmm. And it sucks because he probably was okay at his job, if not good enough to be there, because he seemed like one of the guys who was like very integrated with the rest of them.
He was proud.
Right, he was proud. He was proud to be friends with all of those guys. You know, the guys from China and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So, but you also saw the difference between the way of living some of these people. Like, you see, you know, there's a big difference between, like, I think it's like they were there. They came over to get paid to work at this factory to set them up, help them, whatever. And they all went, and you obviously have to get a house, you have to get a place, right? And they got an apartment. They all went in and chipped in for an apartment, but they didn't go and like, well, I don't need to live a lavish life. I'm here to work. So they just got a fold-out table, some chairs. They don't need chairs. I can sit down on the floor. And that's it. They
only have one moment of peace when they get home and have a cigarette, and that's it.
Right.
Like,
and
that's
their essentials. It's all essentials. Yeah. There's nothing extra. I need my phone because I want to contact my family.
Yeah.
Like, you know, that makes sense.
Right.
You know, things like that. So, and you see the difference. Well, I don't have a house anymore. I don't have this. I don't have that. And it's like you get to the one person who's like, well, now it's I need to pay for this. I was paying for my kids' shoes and all these extra things and all these. And I get it. That's cool because you were making a lot more money and it makes sense. Now you can spend more money. But at the same time, like, these guys live for the essentials. That's all they do.
Bare minimum.
And they work their asses off.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a completely different lifestyle that I could ever live. I can mentality never live that way. I can never mentally go that way.
No, can I. Well, yeah. we're not. And I don't think anybody should, to be brutally honest with you.
I don't think so either.
Right, but at the same time, we're not mentally
we're not wired
set
up.
We're not wired for that one at all. Like,
right. And that's it's fascinating. It's not nothing. No one's really wrong. No one's really right. It's just fascinating to watch these differences happen before my eyes. It's like I don't know, protons and antiprotons fighting each other or something in a chemical lab or something. It's just fun to watch bounce off each other. What do you think of the unionization angle? There's a bit of that. And did you see all those results happening? Like,
well, I found it funny that, I mean, it was total anti-union, and it was kind of just bullshit. And I was like, I mean, a union would help them, because a union would, and it's funny, I like this whole, like, if you come, you can't come to us to talk to us directly, and it's like, you know, they're like, you have to go through a union if you wanted to talk to your managers, and they're like, that's not how it works, but okay. Mm-hmm. Like, I go, it works when you want to implement something, complete changes, but if you want to talk to somebody, you can talk to somebody. Once you have anything legal, once you have anything whatever, then you have to, if someone's just coming up to you to be like, hey, don't forget this is how this is done, you still do that. You don't go to union rep to the union rep reprimanded you. That's not how it works.
What pissed me off was that company that existed just to convince people not.
Well, what's funny is that they were paying top dollar for that guy.
Yeah.
To scare people.
A couple million for that company for this one project?
Right.
That was insane.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're willing. That's my thought too. They're willing to shell out money for this thing to but they can't.
Well, and you got to look at it from their perspective. They needed to make money. I get it from a company's perspective. What makes more money? But also, he was threatening himself to not even have the factory stay open, if they were going to unionize,
right,
or something crazy like that.
And I really thought it was going to go in that direction. I was kind of surprised that it's kind of flourishing now.
Yeah,
finally, it settled down and flourishing, because this was 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, a little less, though.
I don't know. Because
when it opened, whatever, it went from having I think 1,000 employees. Now it's doubled that, 2,000 American employees.
Yeah.
Which is cool, because that's how the movie ends.
Yeah.
And it was like, oh, well, you basically gave the jobs back that GM lost.
Yeah.
Because GM was 2,000 employees or something like that.
Yeah.
So that was cool.
Yeah.
But the question is, they don't get into
it's still not the glory days, though.
No, positive, of course not. Of course not. Very much not. So.
Yeah.
But at the same time, this is the thing that happens in anywhere. Even if they were to unionize, those machines would have came in right away. If anything, more machines would have came in. Be like, well, you want to unionize, right? So then we need to lose people here to have, and then we're just going to maintain.
That was a strange little left turn at the end of the movie where talk about the machines.
Well, they talk about the machines because this is where they're having problems with.
Yeah.
Right? And we need people for the bigger stuff. So let's do the bigger stuff, and the smaller stuff, if it could be automated, let's do the automated. This way we're turning a profit all the time. It's still
like a strange thing at the end.
It was a little strange thing, but it was more like, hey, in the end, you got to remember, the company's always looking out for themselves.
Yeah.
It's a bottom dollar kind of thing.
Yeah.
The movie does a good job of saying that over and over again. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it was just like, even with the threat of unionization, they were losing money. It took 2-3 years for them to... They were losing money for the first 3 years or something like that.
Yeah.
And he's like, well, they needed to make a profit. They need to make money somewhere. And you can see this happening, which is the future of... It's almost like a glimpse of the future. As more and more it gets more automated, less and less workers.
Yeah.
You just took out 6 jobs and you replaced it for 10 machines or whatever.
Yeah.
But the machines cost less to uphold and less overall.
They probably cost more.
Than a guy.
Lose money that first year when you have to buy the machines.
Well, of course. If the machine turns a profit for me at year 5, right, and I don't have to keep rehiring new people, well, yeah, it makes more sense.
Right.
You know, whatever.
Yeah.
So.
No, I understand. It sucks, but I understand.
Yeah.
It still should and should not happen. It's weird. It's a weird time we're in.
Right.
Well,
it's supposed to be whatever, safer, and easier, right?
Ideally.
That's how I guess too.
Ideally, yes. Right. We're gonna start asking you folks.
Well, the bigger problem is how much profit do you need to make that do you need to start replacing people? In the end, does everything need to be automated? No, right? So you can supply the jobs or whatever. But in the end, it's like, well, how much profit is that company looking forward to make?
Mm-hmm.
Right. That's what it comes down to. So.
Yeah. That's true.
Overall, a really cool documentary, though.
Yeah, very, very fascinating. I love it. It's, like I said, it's kind of universal. Anyone can, anyone.
Very much so, yeah.
Yeah, from France to here, anyone can watch and understand it. and be fascinated by it. It's human stuff is crazy. There was something I was going to mention, and I'm forgetting as I'm thinking, and it's gone. If it comes back, maybe I'll mention it some other time. Anyway, but that's all I have in American Factory, roughly. And that is it for our show. You have been listening to another movie podcast, I would hope. We are a bi-weekly show. We come out every other weekend. Next time, I'm not going to mention the end stuff. It's okay. Next time, we have three movies. I'm choosing the next three movies. It's going to be interesting. We're going to do Joker.
Okay.
We're going to do... Oh,
before you get into it, yeah. Have you heard about all the things about Joker now?
No.
Because the thing that happened with Dark Knight Rises or whatever, Dark Knight, that mass, the theater thing, the shooting in the theater.
Oh, yeah, okay.
So they're talking about all guidelines about what you can wear, what not wear to the theaters, to costume-wise. They never brought it up for any Disney movies. You can bring, like, your masks or whatever for the superhero movies. For this one, since it's Joker, you can't come, like, dressed-wise, there's guidelines for certain theaters have them.
So since someone with an Iron Man mask can't kill people?
Apparently not, but for this one, anyways, they're talking about what you can and can't wear or whatever, what their policies are.
Again, one asshole.
I know,
making all these things.
I know, and it's like stupid. Yeah, so it's like this big.
This is what I'm talking about.
They're talking about like this big thing, a big fear thing, apparently for movie theaters. People are afraid for.
I don't think they are. I don't think anyone was thinking about it until someone brought it up again.
I think the media brings it up.
Yeah,
and then it's like
no one was thinking about it. Trust me, no one gives a fuck. Okay, anyway, Joker. Now I don't want to do it. I was originally going to pick Lucy in the Sky, which is another space movie, actually.
Okay.
That may still be it, because I don't know if we can watch this one on time. We'll see. It comes out on the weekend the next one's due. Okay. But it's going to be on Netflix, and it's El Camino.
Oh, nice.
So.
Breaking Bad.
With Jesse Pinkman. Mm-hmm. And then we'll conclude our show with a review from a little later on this year. I mentioned it before, Midsommar. I'm going to buy it.
Nice.
So it's off to rent and buy Midsommar, and that's going to be one of the reviews I definitely want to talk about.
Good.
So until then, I am Oscar.
I'm Ralph.
Laters.
You will not remember the last hour and a half of what you have just seen. You will forget the contents of this movie.